Unsere Krankenhäuser sind immer für uns da, Tag und Nacht, in ganz Deutschland. Sie möchten mehr zur neuen Krankenhausreform wissen? Dann sind Sie hier richtig. Krankenhaus-mit-zukunft.de. Eine Information des Bundesministeriums für Gesundheit.
Happy November.
I love November. Thank you. Happy November to you.
November? I hardly know her. How many months does that work with? All of them? No, not March.
September.
October.
I hardly know her.
December.
April. I hardly know her.
June. I hardly know her.
July. I hardly know her.
July. I knew it because Genever Truth. Did that work?
Wait, I got it. It took me a second.
Okay,
I got there.
It's highbrow.
I know. Highbrow humor. That's what we are like on this podcast. We only tell jokes you gotta think about.
Welcome to Recovering Gleek, a podcast for all of your complicated feelings about the TV show Glee.
Hello, everyone. I keep looking at our Skype video and seeing that we're wearing Christmas colors. And I'm like, who are we? Like, Mr. Ding, and Mrs. Claus? Boop, beep, beep, boop, boop. Welcome to your Christmas special. All of you who say that leave room for Thanksgiving, Christmas doesn't start until December, turn this off. We don't want you here. It's the holiday season, baby. Happy November.
Billy Joel was Jewish. Is Jewish.
Hanukkah season is here. Honestly, my headphones are blue. My wall is white. Happy Hanukkah.
I love that. Happy Hanukkah.
Happy Hanukkah, everybody.
Honestly, hear me out. I feel like I'm a big holiday hater. This year, I feel like that's slipping away. I feel my teen angst slipping away from me. I'm like excited to like celebrate the holidays.
And you're having Christmas in New York.
I know. Oh, and my mom and stepdad are coming into town for Christmas, like for that week. And I'm so beyond excited.
Go to Manhattan and look at all the bougie Christmas decorations. Like we all will. The freaking department stores on Fifth Avenue that just deck everything out.
I'm going to tourist it up too.
Well, happy holidays. May everyone have a lovely holiday season in New York City and go see the bougie Christmas decorations on Fifth Avenue.
And you know what, Ian? I hope you have a great holiday on your boat. That'll be so fun. And I'm sure a ton of people go on cruises for the holidays and have a blast.
Honestly, we haven't
and
talked
the air
about
gets
this.
Cool.
Halloween was cool.
Really? Okay. Oh my God, tell
we
me.
We haven't spoken about this. My one complaint, sorry to my employer. Also, my name's Ian Allred. I didn't say that.
My name is Lena Knatzer. I didn't say that either.
Just after our minisode where we didn't introduce ourselves until the last 5 seconds. And I'm a Gleek. Ah! We're both Gleeks.
I'm a Gleek too.
So, no offense to my employer, but they really could have done a better job with the decorating. There were almost no decorations on the ship. I was a little let down. But on Halloween, they had a costume contest on the pool deck. Like all the cruise director staff, they were all dressed as Alice in Wonderland characters, and they had a costume contest for all the passengers. They had like most creative and people entered and most funny and most scary and all that stuff. That was very fun. Most creative, this woman did not win. Frankly, she was robbed. A woman was dressed as a pinata and she went up to show her costume and then she handed a stick to the host and said, "Hit me." And the host said, "What?" And she said, "Hit me." And the host like taps her with a stick and she threw out candy to the audience. It's very fun.
That's so cool.
And then the dancers all did Thriller. The dancers all performed Thriller on the pool deck in their Halloween costumes. One of the dancers, I have told her so many times that we're kindred spirits because she just has... She's a person who just comes up with bits and then fully commits herself to them, no matter like the time or money required. And I just love that in a person. So they're performing Thriller, the choreo to Thriller for Halloween in front of all the guests. They're supposed to wear Halloween costumes. for her Halloween costume, she dresses as Jennifer Gardner in 13 Going on 30 in the scene where they do Thriller. She literally hand sewed the dress herself. Like, bought the big butterfly necklace, bought like these turquoise high heel shoes. And she, for the entire routine, was front and center. And I was like, honestly, these passengers don't deserve how funny this is.
That's so
funny. I do have a video of it. It was the best costume of the night. I was so proud of her. It's like, this is the funniest thing I've ever seen in my life.
That's really fun.
Incredible. Incredible.
Gosh, you know what song is in 13 Going on 30?
What?
Vienna by Billy Joel.
Oh my gosh.
One of the first couple of months we were here in New York City, we watched 13 Going on 30, and I realized that I was the exact, I'm not 30, but I was the same age difference of 13 to 30 when I first watched this movie. I was like 8, so like 8 to 26, I think. When that movie came out, I did the math. It's the same math. And I 25. Felt like, yeah, I was 25.
Sorry, 17. Yes. Yeah.
No. Yeah. So I, but like, I felt like I, so that part came on where she like goes home and she's like, what the fuck happened? I felt like I was my 8-year-old self. I like had the most like intense breakdown watching a movie that I've ever had. And I felt like I was like, am I 8-year-old self waking up 25 in New York City? Like, what happened? Like, where did I go? You know, and not that that was a bad thing, but just like, I felt transported. It was really intense. That movie is one of the most beautiful pieces of media on the planet. Oh my God. Billy Joel. You ready to talk about
Billy Joel? Let's do it.
Let's Vienna. Do it.
Scenes from an Italian restaurant.
Let's start with some Billy Joel facts. I came up with a little nickname for him. How about? Billy Jacks. I literally, this encore, morning, I came, encore, like, encore. I was like, what's it going to be? Billy Jacks. Perfect. So I was trying to remember it rather than just come up with it. So that's why my brain farted.
I thought you were doing a bit.
No, not a bit. I was genuinely trying to remember what I said.
Oh, yeah. It's time for the clicks.
William Martin Joel was born in the Bronx, New York on May 9th, 1949. When he was 1 year old, his family moved to Long Island in a suburb called Hicksville in the town of Oyster Bay, where he and his cousin Judy, whose parents adopted, were raised in a section of Levitt homes. Billy Joel's father was a Holocaust survivor and I was reading all about him, and it was like a really, really tragic story, and like, I'd love to tell you about it a little bit if I can. So Billy Joel's father, Helmut, or his Americanized name was Howard, was a classical pianist and a businessman born in Nuremberg, Germany, to a Jewish family. He was the son of a merchant and a manufacturer. He was educated in Switzerland, and his father created a highly successful mail order textile business, which was like so successful, and like they were pretty wealthy, like his whole family was in on it. And then the Nazi regime came into play, and they essentially like ruined the business. So his father's father, Carl, was wrongfully accused of underpaying and sexually harassing his workers. He countered by relocating his factory to Berlin and agreeing to Nazi terms, because they were like trying to push him out. But he agreed to new Nazi terms, including hanging a sign that declared that the business was Jewish owned. But in 1938, a new law was passed forbidding Jewish people to own businesses. So he was forced, their whole family was forced, to sell his hard-earned company to the Nazis for a fraction of the millions it was worth. So they, like, all of this generational wealth was gone. To make matters worse, the Nazis' offer of payment turned out to be an attempt to lure him into arrest. The Joels fled to Cuba in 1939, using what wealth they had left to expedite the process. They arrived in New York City in 1942, and according to the Billy Joel doc, Billy Joel's father, Helmut Joel, was drafted into the United States Army in 1943. That was a year after they had escaped from Nazi Germany. So he returned from war, a like super changed man. He married Rosalind Neiman soon after. On May 9th, 1949, they had a son named William Martin Joel. His father ended up leaving the family like a few years later. Him and his wife Rosalind ended up divorcing a few years later and then leaving. And then he ended up living in Europe and he raised a family there. Billy was saying that his father was always a really dark presence. And when he was 6 years old, he would hear his dad say life is a cesspool. Without my father around, he said, I was constantly searching for my own identity, Billy said. In some ways, this can free you up. You can be anything you want. But in other ways, you may not feel like you have a center. But he says the silver lining was that his father was a classical pianist. And then Billy believes that if he stayed, he would have discouraged him from becoming a professional musician. Billy was an incredibly accomplished pianist very quickly because his whole family was like, you know, classically trained. And then at four, he started playing and it was like it skyrocketed, like just showed immediate prowess being a pianist and then a songwriter. He attended Hicksville High School until 1967, but did not graduate with his class. He was playing at a piano bar to support himself and his mother and sister, and he missed a crucial English exam after playing at a late night gig at a piano bar the evening before. They always said that he was a great...
And that's why he didn't graduate? Yeah, was that one exam?
Yeah, literally. So he was... Yeah. Yo. So he was like... supporting his mother and sister. He played, you know, he was a great pianist. He was playing at bars and he stayed up all night and he missed an English exam. I was reading that when he was 45, he sent a letter to Hicksville High School and was like, hey, can I graduate? And they let him graduate. They were like, yeah, sure, you got it. And that's kind of sweet.
We'll pay you to say that you're an alumni of this high school.
Yeah, seriously. They were like, let's do it. But he was like, so he missed that exam and he was like, you know what? I don't care. I'm not going to make this up. I'm going to drop out of school now. And he said, I told them to hell with it. If I'm not going to Columbia University, I'm going to Columbia Records. And you don't need a high school diploma over there. So, yeah. He dropped out of high school and he said, I'm going to make music full time now. He's like, I'm supporting my family. I can do that. He struggled for the first couple years of his career. He like was in a couple of bands and then he signed a record deal with Family Productions and started off on a solo career in 1971. His first release was Cold Spring Harbor. In 1972, Joel caught the attention of Columbia Records after a live radio performance of the song Captain Jack. It became super popular in Philadelphia, and that promoted him to sign with a new record deal with the company and released his second album, Piano Man. And we all know how popular Piano Man is. So he skyrocketed. Billy Joel has like accomplished so much in his career. He has sold more than 15 million records overall. Billy Joel ranks as one of the most popular recording artists and respected entertainers in the world. Throughout the years, Joel's songs have acted as personal and cultural touchstones for millions of people, mirroring his own goal of writing songs that meant something during the time in which I lived and transcended that time. Billy Joel has had 33 top 40 hits and 23 Grammy nominations since signing his first solo recording contract in 1972. In 1990, he was presented with a Grammy Legend Award. He was inducted into the Songwriters Hall of Fame in 1992. And Joel was presented with the Johnny Mercer Award, the organization's highest honor, in 2001. In 1999, he was inducted into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, and he has received the Recording Industry Association of American Diamond Award, presented for albums that have sold over 10 million copies. Also, I need to point this out. We have done so many songs, Billy Joel songs on Glee already. Mm-hmm. Already. We have done so many Billy Joel songs. You might remember Uptown Girl, New York State of Mind, The Longest Time, and Only the Good Die Young. And I'm certainly forgetting some, but like.
Well, they also did like an unofficial version of Piano Man and Dream On.
Oh, yeah. Literally. I have that Galactal on later. Thanks for pointing it out. Like, literally, we've done like so many Billy Joel songs. And like, I feel like I know a lot of people who maybe don't know Billy Joel, but I promise you, you know Billy Joel. Yeah. Like, similarly to the Beatles, like one of the most prolific songwriters of all time, especially like Piano Man. if you've been to any party with any person who knows how to play the piano and like a group of drunk people, they're going to start playing Piano Man.
If you've been to any piano bar, you ever. Have seen the pianist play Piano Man with his soul dying in his eyes because literally, he's asked like, to play it 200 this. Times every night.
I literally
night.
Can't keep doing this. That's true. And honestly, good for Billy Joel. He still makes money on that. Maybe not the piano bar versions, but like people love that song. That's a little bit about Billy Joel. Let me tell you about
Those
this episode. Are
very interesting. Thank you.
Right? Literally, I was like, I was like putting this all together early this morning, and then I like started reading, especially about Billy Joel's father. And I was like, this is so, and like that generational trauma, I think like is absolutely in his work. He ended up visiting his dad in Europe, and that's when he wrote Vienna. It's a song for his dad. Let me tell you a little bit about this episode. Moving out. Alrighty. So Moving Out is the sixth episode of Glee's fifth season and the 94th episode overall. It premiered November 21st, 2013. And it's a tribute to, I don't know if you've heard of him, Billy Joel. This episode was directed by Brad Falchuk and written by Roberto Aguirre-Sacasa.
Seriously?
Yep.
That's surprising.
Is it? In what way?
I just feel like every time that Roberto's, not every time, but like almost every time that he's written an episode in the past, there is some big swing in the episode that I'm like, why?
There's not why a big swing happen? In this episode?
Is there?
I don't know. I feel like the Rachel and Sam stuff is a pretty big swing in a direction. Like two episodes after the tribute episode to her boyfriend? I don't know. Not to reveal my thoughts on that too quick.
But it's small enough that it doesn't feel like that's Roberto doing it. It feels like the writers as a whole decided that they should do that. That they're like planting seeds, you know?
I hear that. It certainly is a swing in this episode. It's maybe not Roberto's. Let me tell you about the songs in this episode. So all these songs are by Billy Joel. The first song is Moving Out. Open parentheses, Anthony's song performed by Blaine Anderson and Sam Evans. So there's this part where they get on the bus and then have like an interaction that is so weird.
Who is this man? Who is Blue Hoodie Man? I literally did not look at Darren Criss or Court Overstreet at all because I was like, this man in the blue hoodie is so distracting.
I know. Well, so the man on the bus in the blue hoodie is portrayed by one of Glee's electricians, and he's a friend of Darren and Cord's. He's unnamed in this Glee Wiki article, but he was planted on set as a prank. You can briefly see Darren and Cord break character when they recognize him. They're like,
okay, because he looks, he's like so conspicuously dressed with like big glasses and a hoodie, and he looks, first of all, uncomfortable, like he doesn't know how to be in front of a camera.
Yeah.
And he keeps like glancing over at them and looking away. That makes so much sense.
It to me looks like, I mean, hearing this, it seems like a take they weren't even planning on using, but then they were like, honestly, it's kind of sweet. Let's keep it, you know?
Yeah.
But it's very funny. And then we have Piano Man, performed by Blaine Anderson. Like Ian said, Brian Ryan also sang a cover of this song. It was unreleased because they just sang it in a bar. This is the second time Blaine sings a song previously sung by another character. The first being Tonight, because Tina Cohen Chang sang it.
Co-opting other people's music. Blaine.
No, Blaine.
Get your own songs.
This is also the second solo Blaine sings in New York playing the piano, the first being Teenage Dream in The Breakup.
Which is another redo of a song, but it's his own song, so I'll allow it.
Before Glee, Darren and Criss used to play at various piano bars, cafes, and restaurants to support himself between acting jobs and auditions. And Piano Man was apparently the most commonly requested one, which doesn't make any sense to me.
Really,
I've never
heard
that.
So shocking. That's so bizarre.
I know. Seriously, you guys, if you haven't been to a piano bar, I implore you to go and just count how many times you hear Piano Man. I promise you it'll be at least two. Darren Criss, this is just a really fun fact. Darren Criss is a self-taught piano player, and after After Glee, he opened up his own piano bar in LA called Tramp Stamp Grannies. We should visit.
That you is can awesome. Visit. Anyone who's a self-taught anything, oh, I'm going to get in a fight with.
Oh, yeah.
How dare you be good at something?
I know. He's also very good.
I know. He's great.
And he shines in this episode because of those skills. So taking that right to the bank. And then we have My Life, performed by Jake Puckerman. This bum, 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 Jake Puckerman's last solo ever on the show.
I mean, Glee's definition of solo is always weird to me.
I know. It changes from episode to episode as well. So who knows?
There's a number coming up that's one of my favorite numbers ever that I would qualify as a Jake solo, but like... Mm. Three or four lines of it are sung by someone else. Whatever.
I don't know. With this song, both the Puckerman brothers have had a Billy Joel song sung as a solo. Puck sang Only the Good Die Young in season 2, the episode hashtag Grilled Cheeses. Shout out.
Thank you, Grilled Cheeses.
Thank you, Grilled Cheeses. And then we have Honesty, performed by Artie. And this song is Cory Monteith's, he used it as an audition song for Glee. He auditioned with this song. Isn't that nice? And then we have Innocent Man, performed by Ryder Lynn. This is dun, 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 the last time Ryder Lynn has a solo on the show. And then we have Just the Way You Are, performed by Blaine, Kurt, Rachel, Sam, and Santana. And then we have You May Be Right, performed by Will Schuster and the New Directions. This is bum, 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 the last time Ryder sings in season 5 and the whole series. Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
I mean, not is that right? Because I'm sure it is, but like,
yeah, that's so, and that's what I thought. Surprising. I'm not sure, but we'll see. That's, I know. I'm like, we still have like nationals to go to.
I don't like looking forward. I don't remember any other writer performances, but me also it just feels like that has to be incorrect.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But obviously it's not. But shoot, that's wild.
All right. Okay. Now the regular, just the, you know, glax about just other things. Moving Out was also the title given to the jukebox musical of songs of Billy Joel.
Is it based on this episode of Glee?
I think so.
It's the same plot.
I think so. I'm not sure. This episode had a rating of 1.6 with a total of 4.44 million viewers. The college program that Becky applies for at the University of Cincinnati is called the Transition and Access Program, and it is an actual program offered by the college, which I thought was super cool. Jen Ushkowitz revealed on her podcast, her old podcast, or maybe not, That's What You Really Missed, revealed on her podcast that she was really upset that she didn't get to sing in this episode. She also stated that she really wanted to sing Vienna. Billy Joel commented on the use of his music in the show, saying that he was very happy with it, that his songs were being used on the show and that it was targeted towards a younger audience. So bringing Billy Joel to a younger audience. The sigh.
I just... It's upsetting to me.
Yeah.
I like, you know... with tribute episodes, they're always singing songs for no reason. Like, there's always, like, numbers that are unjustified because that's just how a tribute episode is. It's something that bothers me, but, like, it is the structure of the show. So it's not like, well, we couldn't find a reason to have Tina sing Vienna. Like, yes, you could have because that crap always happens. It hurts my feelings. I'm like, this girl has been in this show for 94 episodes and she really wanted to sing a song for the Billy Joel tribute and you couldn't find a way to put it in the episode.
Yeah.
Anyways.
Yeah, totally. Despite Kurt getting a tongue piercing at the end of Twerk, it is not shown or mentioned at all. So he took it out. This is the third episode where Blaine sings a solo, a duet, and has a solo in a group number.
And yet,
this is the third episode.
We couldn't find a place for Vienna.
I know. Insane. Glee's YouTube account mistakenly says that this episode is called Moving On. So, super duper.
If that's moving up, then I'm moving on.
Moving on. This episode marks the first appearance of Millie Rose in season 5 and her last appearance on the series. And those are your Billy Jacks and your Glacks.
Well, I cannot believe it. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Unsere Krankenhäuser sind immer für uns da. Tag und Nacht. In ganz Deutschland. Sie möchten mehr zur neuen Krankenhausreform wissen? Dann sind Sie hier richtig. Krankenhaus-mit-zukunft.de. Eine Information des Bundesministeriums für Gesundheit.
All right. Recap us an episode. You're the recap man. Recap us an episode tonight, 'cause we're all in the mood for a recap, and you've got us feeling alright. La di da di di da. Here's what you missed on Glee. It's Billy Joel week. Blam go to New York for college auditions and interviews, and Sam realizes he doesn't want to go to college. He wants to be a male model. Artie helps Becky look into colleges that are right for her. With Jake leaning into his womanizing ways and Marley newly single, Ryder asks her out, but Marley is unsure she wants to get back into a relationship so quickly. And that's what you missed on Glee. Ooshy-boo-doosh, mow-mow.
All right, Ian. A tribute episode. Your fave. How'd you feel about this app?
Okay, so I have noticed as Glee has gone on, the tribute episodes have kind of shifted. Okay. I feel like back when we were doing Power of Madonna, back when we were doing Britney, the tribute episode was like, this is spectacle. Spectacle above anything. And so we're like recreating musicals, we're doing big production numbers, and we're finding any excuse to justify that. Like whether it's, you know, a laughing gas induced dream sequence, whatever. And they also, the artists themselves is a really big part of the episode, and that they like talk a lot about the artists, they talk a lot about their history, all that stuff. Mm-hmm. Now, with like Moving Out, with the Beatles episodes, with the Stevie Wonder episode last season, it feels much more like this is a regular episode of Glee that just incidentally has music by this artist. And yes, we'll mention the artist and we'll mention like a few facts about them, but like it's kind of a normal episode of Glee. I don't think one is better than the other. I don't think that objectively one is better than the other. I personally prefer this new tribute episode format.
Yeah.
I would say it's probably less entertaining because we don't have like big spectacle, crazy, yeah, cool numbers.
We don't have BMX riders going through flames and like people, exactly, on stilts. Yeah.
But also my issue with the tribute episodes of lore was that I always felt like they were sacrificing character and they were sacrificing plots that made sense to justify these big spectacle numbers. And these more recent tribute episodes, there's a few times when they do a song where I'm like, does the song really make sense? But overall, the plot lines feel like a continuation of what's already been happening on the show. The characters feel like they're acting relatively in character the whole time. And it just so happens that they're all singing Billy Joel songs.
Yeah.
So I'm not like this was one of my favorite episodes of Glee by any means, but like I liked this episode, and my normal hangups with tribute episodes aren't really existent in this one.
Totally. Yeah. This episode feels pretty middle of the road to me. Like it, but I don't dislike it, but I also don't love it, which sucks because I feel like I love Billy Joel.
Mm-hmm.
You know? But it's not a bad episode.
Yeah, I agree. It's kind of a middle of the road episode. I don't know. I guess that is something that is to be said for the old tribute episodes, is like they were for sure memorable. Like they had a lot of stuff going on. And I'll be honest, I maybe was too hard on them. Like I maybe was too hard on Power of Madonna. I maybe was too hard on Britney. I do stand by the fact that there were times when they just threw characters out the window because they wanted them to sing a song, and that always irritates me. But like, Moving Out is, there's not like a moment in this episode that I'm like, what an iconic Glee moment, in the way that like Me Against the Music is super iconic,
yeah,
or like a Virgin is super iconic.
Yeah.
I think it is pretty middling, and I think while it is truer to the characters and true to the story, and I personally like that, it does result in an episode that I never hear anyone talk about literally ever. So
I always forget that this episode exists. That makes,
Me too. Me too.
Yeah. Interesting. I mean, there's something we should go, maybe go back and watch them. I don't know. I feel like Glee is so interesting when you watch it in order, because I feel like it is constantly ebbing and flowing what is like good at the time. And, you know, like something compared to something is like good. And then like you can't like move episodes around because they don't fit with each other. Like I feel like Power of Madonna like doesn't even exist in this world. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can kind of feel the spectacle of Glee wearing off, that this doesn't feel like a show that does, I mean, they still try and do like big things to get people talking, but it doesn't feel like a show that's going to be doing event episodes anymore. Onto this episode specifically.
Yeah.
What do you want to talk about first? Do you want to talk about McKinley stuff or New York stuff?
Let's talk about McKinley stuff first and then go to New York.
Start with Becky and Artie.
Oh yeah.
Or Jarlder, Jake Marley Ryder. Jarlder, I'm a wordsmith.
It's so good. Let's talk about, oh gosh, what do you pick?
I'm gonna be honest, Betty is the least interesting part of the episode to me. So do we talk about that first and get it out of the way?
Sure. I like this part of the episode.
Give me your thoughts. What do you like about it? Just like a little more in-depth recap for anyone who hasn't seen this episode in a long time. Artie finds out that Becky wants to go to college, but she's embarrassed to tell anyone because she's afraid that if she goes to college, she's going to get bullied or people will tell her that she's stupid, all of that stuff. Artie, in searching for schools that were more accommodating to students in wheelchairs, also found programs that were more accommodating to students with Down syndrome. So he helps Becky look into schools that have those programs. Becky gets really excited to go to college. She talks to Sue about it. And Sue honestly has a very tender scene with her where she like, even though she loves Becky and wants to keep her around, supports her in moving on with her life.
I like this plot actually a lot. I think Becky is such an awesome character. And I, first of all, love that they're going all in on calling her a Becretary. Like, they call her a Becretary in the recap. Sue goes, she can't leave me, she's my Becretary. Like, she's my Becretary. Like, and just, like, saying, calling her Becretary just in full 100% earnestness is, oh my God, it tickles me. It's just so good. And I just love this plot. I think Sue and Becky's relationship is one of my favorite relationships on this show. And this, like, these two women who are just fierce and bitchy and terrible, just like being so protective and loving to each other, I think is one of the best things on this show. And I also love that Artie, you know, in his search for like accessibility in school is like, oh my gosh, like I know and love this person, I would love to like assist them on their journey. And I just think it's really lovely. And then I love when Sue ends up being like, hey, stop going around at her business. And then finally is like, ask a lot of questions. Like, please, like, make sure it's a good place. Like, please vet it for me. I just think it's like a really fun plot. I love this plot. I think it's like a fun arc to Sue. I think it's funny. I think it's touching. I love it. I'm into it. I think it's great.
Heck yeah. This plot does have the one moment of this episode where I'm like, so that song was forced. It's very much like Kevin McHale told Ryan that he wanted to sing Honesty by Billy Joel. Because the song, they like really stretch to justify it.
Yeah.
Doesn't make sense. That Artie calls Becky into the auditorium, sings Honesty to her, and then it's like, I want you to be honest about the fact that you want to go to college. What?
Right. Like, what are you saying? I know. You know, bizarre. You're so right.
Beautiful song, beautiful performance, but bizarre justification to have it in the episode.
I also love this runway. Where did this come from? I love it.
I know. The light plotting on the runway, too.
The square where, like, is so beautiful. Yes.
All the squares like fit perfectly on the runway, and as he wheels forward, more and more squares appear. I was like, this person's a future Imagineer. They're about to do the light mapping on Cinderella's castle for the fireworks.
I know. Like, this, like, 14-year-old kid is, like, just built this runway and then, like, focused all the lights to be squares in, like, the perfect, he's going places.
He was like, Artie, you think you're dedicated to Becky going to college? I've been in here for 15 hours.
I stayed here all night long. People who do lighting are always doing that.
More than you do.
More than you do, genius. Seriously.
I think I care about Becky's future more than you do, genius. But I like this plot line enough. Like, I think it's a good plot line. I'm not like, about it. But, like, I think it's good enough.
Yeah. I do think it's, like, in talking about, like, moving on and going to college, like, a thing that this show does a lot, I think it's, like, a cool perspective. Like, someone, you know, it's something we've done before, but someone who's, like, scared and, like, mm-hmm. also in terms of accessibility, like, yes. you know, I just like.
And I especially, the thing that I really love about this plotline is the Sue and Becky stuff. Like, we mm-hmm. haven't seen a tender moment between Sue and Becky in a long time. We've mostly just seen them be funny together and be rude to yeah. people together.
Yeah.
But the scene, first of all, when Artie confronts Sue about why don't you want Becky to go to college, and you find out that, no, Sue has actually been doing a lot of research herself. She's just really afraid that it's going to be a bad situation for Becky.
Yeah.
But then the scene when Becky comes back and Sue asks her about how the college job went, and she says, oh, it was pretty okay. And Sue's like, oh, well, like, what did you learn? What was it like? And Becky talks about, well, I could be taking this kind of class. I met these kind of people. And Sue's like, well, that sounds a lot better than okay to me. Mm-hmm. And you can see, first of all, Emmy Award winner Jane Lynch
yeah,
is such
seriously.
An incredible actress. You can just, like, see in her eyes how sad she is that it was a good experience, because it means that Becky is yeah. going to be leaving, but she is trying so hard to be supportive because overall she wants this girl to be happy and successful in life. She is obviously hysterical. She's funny. She's always funny in every episode. But yeah. then you have scenes like this every once in a while, and it's like, mm-hmm. Jane Lynch is so well-rounded as a performer.
Completely.
Oh my gosh.
She's I'm so amazing. Glad you brought that up. Seriously. Yeah, this plot's fun. And also, like, has, like, some real beautiful moments.
Becky is, like, so horny in this plot that it is
oh, yeah.
a little much for me. It's
I hear
a little
that.
Much for me.
What did she call it? A purple mushroom?
Yeah, she
I
calls
died.
Artie's dick his purple mushroom. I don't need that.
No.
I, like,
so
really,
bad.
Roberto's got to pay for my therapy on that one.
No, totally.
It's just,
and that's
it's just
how
like
we
a,
know it's a Roberto Aguirre Sacasa episode. Someone calling a penis a purple mushroom.
And it's like constant. Like anytime. Yeah. And like, hear me out. I do think that that's like a funny bit.
Yeah, totally.
That it's just because, you know, we know that Becky had a crush on Artie in the past. They went on a date yeah. that one time. And so for every time that Artie comes to talk to her, no matter how many times that he makes it clear, like, this is about you going to college, the fact that every time he comes up to her, she thinks he's about to indecent proposal her
yeah,
is
no.
funny.
No, it's
is
funny.
But hearing her say these, like, very sexually explicit and bizarre things is a little much for me.
Sure.
Did you see the amount of spit that came out of my mouth?
I did.
That was disgusting.
That I wasn't was gonna mention it.
All right,
that's so funny.
That's
hell yeah.
That's Becretary.
Now let's go to our throuple.
Jarlder.
Like, if they just dated each other, I think it'd be okay.
Honestly, it would. Except
what?
For the fact that, according to this show, Jake would just inevitably cheat on the two of them.
Well, yeah, I hear you. I don't know. I think they should explore polyamory. I think they should explore, like, you know.
You know, I think they should explore Marley being a single woman.
They know that number one, the girl just wants to literally, you and I talked on the Patreon exclusive for like an hour about how much we love to be alone. This girl just wants to be alone. Mm-hmm. She's like, please, just because we go out doesn't mean we're dating.
The way the writer swoops in. She has been broken up with Jake for like a week, and Ryder swoops in and he's like, I think you're the most amazing girl in the world. I'm cool. I'm fit. I'm nice. You should go out with me. Let this girl breathe. Let this
I
girl
know.
Breathe. And hear me out. I think it makes sense. Like, oh, Ryder
yeah.
has had feelings for her for months and months and months.
It is such a teenage boy thing to do as
yeah.
well.
So I'm not saying that it's unrealistic or out of character, but also just like, I'm sick of it. Like, I'm sick of
oh,
romantic
yeah.
plotlines on this show. And we just ended Marley's relationship with Jake, and now we're like, the new Marley dynamic is that Ryder wants to date her, but she's unsure. Like, how about Marley has a dynamic that's not about her love life? I'm over
it. No, totally. Absolutely. And, you know, I do... I'm not sure. I don't remember what happens next, but I feel like it's headed in that direction. That's something I do like about this plot, is like, you know, people keep like talking around her like she doesn't have a choice in what the is going on. And her being like, I'm like, listen, Ryder, just because we went out one time does not mean we're dating. Leave me the alone. Like, I think is, I really like that. And I don't know. I'm into that. And I think, you know, her deciding to be single and that, like, that relationship was hard on her and her taking some time for herself, I think is good. And I really like that.
So yeah, you are correct.
I'm into this plot.
You are correct. We got Marley setting some boundaries, which I love. We got her setting her foot down and being like, I need to be alone for a while. So, like, I, you know, credit to the writers. They're not throwing her into a relationship with Marley, with Ryder. She does set her foot down and be like, hey, I'm setting a boundary. We went on one date. We're not boyfriend and girlfriend. Like, chill out about this.
He like posts on Instagram. Oh my gosh. So cringy. Yeah. Weirdo.
Embarrassing. And then he tells her, he's like, go check your Instagram so you can see your reaction.
After the first date. What a weirdo.
You know what I love about this plotline though?
What?
First of all, I don't like that Jake cheated on Marley. Heartstop. We've talked about it at length. However, if that had to happen, we had to live in a world where that plotline happened.
Yeah.
I'm kind of living for the drama. I'm not going to lie. I'm living for the drama a little bit. All the Jake stuff in this episode, I love.
It's funny, too.
I love him trying so hard to win Marley back, only for her, good for her, to shoot it down. And then him to be like, you know what? If everyone just thinks that I'm like a womanizer and I am no good, then I might as well be a womanizer and be no good and just, you know, be who everyone thinks I am. And then he has one of the best numbers in the entire episode.
Yeah.
My life. Totally. It's incredible.
It's like everything that's good about a Jake number. It is like choreographed to perfection. It's very fun. It's amazing.
It's also very musical theater. Like everything about it, from the way it's.
I was thinking that too.
Mm-hmm. From the way the number starts, where it's Ryder and Jake having a conversation where Ryder's like, how could you do this to Marley? Why are you being such an asshole? Blah, blah, blah. And then Jake's like, you know what, Ryder? This is who I am. So either you can deal with it or you can get out of my life. And then the music starts and it is so incredible.
Totally.
And then we have like the scene of him in the locker room and all the Cheerios come out of the showers and the towels and they all dance around him.
Yeah.
We have him like doing angry workout stuff. We have him in the choir room singing it directly to Marley and she's all pissed off. It is so musical theater.
It's
I love it.
It's tons of fun. I literally was watching it and I was like, if I wasn't a musical theater kid, I'd probably fucking hate this number. But because I eat and breathe and poop musical theater, it is my jam. It's my raspberry jam. I love it so much. It's so fun.
It's also very Hello, I Love You, Finn, season one, Hello.
I was just thinking that. It is so Hello, I Love You. I literally was just thinking that. And we love that number.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. No, it is awesome. It's such a great number. And I just think, like, also, like, all of the Jake cameos throughout the rest of the plot, too, because it kind of shifts into a Ryder plot at the end, are just so good. Like him throughout every single number dancing with like eight girls, like, and like making
like,
everyone jealous.
Like rubbing
very
it
funny.
In their faces that he's
no,
like,
totally.
Yeah, you know what? I can get anyone I want. So screw all of you.
Literally. It's heaps of fun. I'm obsessed. It's tons of fun.
What's the number? Oh, it's during the finale. It's during You May Be Right. That Ryder has a little bit that he sings to Marley that's like, hey, isn't this fun and shouldn't we go out again? And then Jake literally walks between the two of them, sings a line, grabs a girl's hand, and then walks away with her. And it's such a like F you moment.
Evil.
It's awesome.
It's evil. It's so fun.
Awesome. I'm kind of into the drama now. Like, I can't lie. I'm kind of into the Marley and Jake drama of it all.
Yeah, I'm into it too. Especially like at the core of this drama, just a girl who needs a break. Like, she, you know, obviously she's, like, sad to lose Jake, but, like, She also just like wants to be alone for a minute and doesn't regret her decision. And I love that so much about the scene with her mom where she, you know, she doesn't regret her decision to end up not having sex with him. Her being like, I just want to be alone for a minute and, you know, I'll wait for when I'm ready.
Mm-hmm. I agree. I think that's why it works. That's why it's now working for me. And I really like it. It's like, yes, we have Marley missing Jake and hurting and being sad and feeling betrayed. She's a human being. But at the core of it, at the end of the day, it's not Marley trying to win Jake back or Marley throwing herself into another relationship with someone else. No. It's Marley being like, I need to figure myself out.
That was
out.
A lot. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
And so we have like the fun stuff of Jake becoming evil Jake.
Yeah.
Contrasted with Marley becoming independent and fully realized Marley.
And I love that. I love that. And I love that for them. And I love to watch it. And I love, honestly, the stuff with Brighter is like, you know, I feel like certainly the extra on all of this, but like the extra of a guy who's been obsessed with her for so long being like, look at me. I'm a nice guy.
Seriously,
give me a chance.
I'm an innocent man.
I'm an innocent man. Give me a chance. And then Marley being like, you're being such a creep right now. Get lost. I'm so into this.
What are your thoughts on Innocent Man? I'm going to be honest. I watched this episode twice. The only thing I could tell you about this number is that he sings in the mirror at the beginning. I really don't remember it.
That's all I remember, too. I remember thinking, what a weird way to have this scene between Marley and Ryder, where you see her and then he is just in the mirrors. And I'm like, what a funky thing. And then they started the song. And I thought that was fun. That was fun, funky, fresh. That's all I remember. Honestly, most of my thoughts on every song are, I wish any girl sang in this episode. But, yeah.
You're right.
Yeah.
It's besides Just the Way You Are, there's like no female solos at all.
No. And like, especially with this plot being, I feel like the core is a Marley plot. The extra is Jake and Ryder. Marley doesn't get to sing. Marley just has people singing at her, which I think is like adds to it in the long run, like that people are making decisions for her. And then she finally is like, shut the fuck up. It's my life. You know, it's not yours. It's mine.
Yeah.
You know?
She sings the reprise.
She does. She says, yeah, it's my life. I mostly was just like, can a girl sing, please? Anyway, but Innocent Man, I was like pretty bored with.
Tina comes in and she sees, you know, that Marley is going through a lot and Marley wants to be single, but she's maybe going to date Ryder. She's got cheated on. And Tina says, slow down, you crazy child. You're so ambitious for a juvenile. Vienna!
You got so much to do and only so many hours in the day. Hello.
Come on. And then
Marley
and Tina duet,
I gotta
Vienna.
Scream at him. Anywho,
and then Marley decides to leave McKinley and move to Vienna.
Hell yeah. Mm.
Some just brief McKinley thoughts before we get out of here. So we have this framing device that it's the McKinley High career fair and Will's all upset that there's nothing about the arts. Mm-hmm. And Sue says to him that he can set up a booth for the arts. You're more than welcome to regale passers-by with your inspiring story of how you dreamt of Broadway stardom and ended up rapping for high schoolers.
lots of great Sue stuff, especially like she says something like that they're like shoehorning Billy Joel songs into things that they don't fit in. And I'm like, I just love when this show knows what it's about.
So the big finale number, we might as well talk about it because it's not a New York number at all. They don't even show up. The big finale number is You May Be Right. And the reason I don't hate this finale number is for the exact reason you just said. They start amping up to sing the song to make a point to Sue. And Sue points out, oh, you're just going to force another Billy Joel number into this to like make a point. And then I was like, OK, I forgive them for forcing a Billy Joel number into this for making a point, because at least they lampshaded it.
Yeah, it's very funny.
I also love right before that number. So they all come to Sue and they say, like, you know what? We are who we are, and like we love the arts, and we shouldn't have to change ourselves to be successful in this world, and we're just gonna be ourselves, and who cares? And Sam says specifically, I love myself the way that I am and I'm not going to change for anyone. Mm-hmm. And Sue goes, well, that is just the screw you attitude that employers love.
I also think this career fair, not to like show the career fair with the fecal sculptures, but like Will is so mad that there are no careers in the arts being represented. To me, a career fair is people in that field coming to visit. So I don't know. I think this, maybe I'm like looking too much into it. I feel like this episode, like what if not, like no one like from the arts wanted to come in? I don't know. It doesn't make any sense to me. It feels like people's parents come in.
Phyllis Diller was busy. She couldn't make it.
Yeah.
Honestly, seriously. She might have been dead. When did Phyllis Diller die?
2012.
So Phyllis Diller had died. She couldn't come out to Lima.
Yeah, seriously.
Shoot.
Oh my gosh. Anyway, that doesn't matter. But it's like Will is so pissed that there's no arts being represented. And I'm like, there are so many reasons the arts could not be represented. Maybe like there are no parents that have like careers in the arts right now. Like most career fairs are like people's uncles like coming in to talk about like trash compacting. Like that's what a career fair is.
Yeah.
It's not just a booth. Anyway, sorry to show a career fair. That's
I'm offended,
my thoughts.
Personally.
I know.
Unsere Krankenhäuser sind immer für uns da. Tag und Nacht. In ganz Deutschland. Sie möchten mehr zur neuen Krankenhausreform wissen? Dann sind Sie hier richtig. Krankenhaus-mit-zukunft.de. Eine Information des Bundesministeriums für Gesundheit.
Do you want to talk about New York? Or do you have more McKinley thoughts?
You know, to quote Billy Joel, I'm in a New York state of mind.
Honestly,
full disclosure, I almost said Empire State of Mind. To quote Jay-Z.
Yeah.
I'm in an Empire Alicia State Keys. Of Mind.
Honestly, there are so many songs that, like, the titles remind me of other songs. Like, Just the Way You Are, I was like, what if I introduced it as Just the Way You Are? And then My Life, I was like, what if I introduced it as It's My Life? And then You May Be Right, I was like, what if I introduced it as You May Be Right? That's nothing.
I was going to say, what's that song?
No, it was only those two. I realized it was only those two, and it didn't feel like enough for as many times as I noticed it. Anyway.
My first thought, first and foremost, the biggest offense in this plotline. I get what you're saying about Sam and Rachel. We'll get to it. Far more offensive. The thing that gave me a physical full body reaction is when Blaine is talking about, what if I don't get into NIADA? I have to have a safety school. And his safety schools are NYU and Columbia.
I swear to God, these writers don't know shit about the world.
It, like, makes me so angry.
Yeah.
I'm like, your safety school are these schools that cost tens of thousands of dollars to attend for a single semester?
Yeah.
How rich are Blaine's parents? His safety school should be, like, Ohio State.
Yeah.
Mm-mm.
I don't understand.
I just think it's irresponsible to be writing a show that you know a lot of children and teenagers who are looking to go to college are going to, and telling them that, like, Columbia is an embarrassing school to attend. That it's like, oh, my plan A didn't work out, so I'm attending Columbia.
I told you, I was like, oh, NYU won't be hard to get into. I didn't apply, but the more I learned about it, I was like, no, NYU is huge. Like, yeah, it's not like Ivy League, but like it, you're so right. It is irresponsible to like tell like our, like, you know, 16-year-old selves that like it's embarrassing to go to Columbia. Oh my God. That is Ivy League.
An Ivy League school is not your plan B.
No.
That's plan A. That's if the stars align and I do an amazing application and I somehow get an amazing scholarship and I also strike oil tomorrow or win the lottery, I will go to Columbia.
And like Oprah wrote my references, you know.
Exactly. But it just promotes this idea of you can only make it in the arts if you go to like these four schools.
Yeah.
Which, hear me out, there is some truth to, because the entertainment industry is horribly classist.
Yeah.
But like, also, you have so many people going into like life ruining debt because they think there's no other way to get their dreams. And hear me out, it's for sure going to be harder to make it if you don't go to those schools. Like, it for sure will be more difficult, but it's still possible. You don't have to literally like sell your soul to go to these incredibly expensive schools because you think there's no other way for you to be a performer.
Yeah, I don't know.
That makes me really annoyed.
Yeah.
Blaine Anderson.
What the hell?
Because you know what? There's plenty of people who spent all this money to go to Juilliard and they're working the same jobs as everyone else.
Literally. Oh my gosh.
I know someone who is a performer and they were going through like a bit of a dry spell and like having a hard time finding work. And they said, but you know what? Every time I get too down on myself, I remind myself that one of my coworkers is a Juilliard graduate. So if she's working this job, then I'm okay to be working this job.
One of my coworkers went to AMDA, and I'm like, oh my gosh. Shout out to my coworker. But I remember hearing about AMDA and thinking, like, I will never... This is maybe mean. But, you know, we went to a state school. Like, you know, and, like, people show state schools constantly. I'm like, I'm literally in the same boat as you guys, so get out of here. There's something that bugs me in this plot, and maybe I'm just being annoying. I feel like Rachel is prime hot Rachel in this episode.
Oh!
Like, is not even acting, is mostly just trying to be hot, you know? And I'm like, I can't even deal with hot Rachel.
There's that moment. So she helps Sam... She finds out that Sam just wants to be a male model, so she helps him take modeling pictures, and she gets the photographer for Funny Girl to come over and take pictures of Sam, and there's a fun little montage, and in the montage, there's a split second where Rachel is, like, in the picture with Sam, like, funny, sexy posing, and it's supposed to be playful and fun, and oh, isn't she cute, but the whole time I was like, Rachel, what are you doing? These are his modeling photos for his portfolio.
Yeah.
Get out of them. Like, why are you trying to make this about yourself? No, I agree. Rachel is like, oh, I'm like so hot and charming and cool.
She's like, I just made this great spaghetti. I'm so cute. I'm like, I don't even know. Like, it's not even like things that she does. It's just the way she does them that is like, this is not the girl that I know. She is the hot girl that I know. The Raquel. The antithesis of Rachel.
Yes.
Seriously. She's so beautiful, but it's like, you know, she's not acting. She is modeling in this episode.
I do like this plot line, though, personally. It feels very true to life to me. It feels very much how, like, 1 year apart high school friend relationships work.
Yeah.
And that, like, when you're a senior in high school and you're looking at schools and you look at a school that one of your friends is attending, they're always like, oh my gosh, so cool. You should come stay with me. We should come meet up. Like, it just feels very real to experiences that I've had and friends of mine have had.
Yeah.
You all meet up, you catch up. It's so exciting to hear about what's going on at your high school. It's so exciting for them to hear about what being an adult is like and what college is like. You do everything you can to try and convince them to attend your school because it'd be so cool to have another person you know going there. I do like this plot. I think it's fun.
I do too. And I think, like, you know, just getting these two in New York is just, I don't know. I love when they bring people to New York. I think it, like, makes the dynamic fun and, like, splits up the group in a fun way. There's also this moment where when they all come in during moving out, Santana is like in a towel and she is like, this is so great. What the fuck are you guys doing here? And you can see she's like smiling, but like you can see she's mouthing like, okay, awesome. Super duper. I'm so glad you guys are here. Like, it's really funny. And I totally agree. This is like so true to life. Your freshman friends are always bringing their high school senior friends like to school and you're like, oh my gosh, what the heck is going on? Like, you do it. I do it. Your friends do it. You watch. It is like such a freshman thing to do.
And there's something that makes you feel so adult to show off to your high school friends and be like, I live here. Like, I don't live with my parents.
It's like, do you want my campus Wi-Fi? I'm a student here. Mm-hmm. I pay tuition. Mm-hmm. This is my apartment. No, totally. But I enjoy this plot. I think it's fun. I also like, you know, showing, you know, I love when this plot comes around on Glee, like the cyclical idea of like getting up and go, like leaving high school and what happens next. I think that is, I'm always interested in this. And I think, you know, this plot of, you know, maybe Sam doesn't like school. School's not for Sam. What is something that Sam likes? Like, what is like a good thing for Sam to do? And he's like, well, like, let's try male modeling. And then doing that, I think it's fun. And Tyra Banks is in this episode. What the hell?
Tyra Banks, America's Next Top Model, Eve. What's her name in Life Size? It's Eve,
Eve,
right?
Eve, yeah.
Eve herself, Tyra Banks is in this episode. I really like this Sam plot.
Yeah.
It's very Sam. Very, very Sam. I love his interview that he completely bombs, but he just because he like keeps putting his foot in his mouth because he keeps trying to say something that will make him more interesting and appealing and accidentally says something ignorant and offensive.
Mm-hmm.
I especially love him talking to Rachel about the fact that he always dreamed of being a male model. Is like, that makes sense for Sam. Ha ha ha.
Yeah.
But the way he talks about it, where he's like, ever since I was a kid, I've had this fantasy where I'm standing on a street and a bus walks by and I'm on the side of the bus in my Calvin Klein's, my junk is as big as a car. And then it shows the fantasy and some man walks up to Sam, looks at the bus and says to Sam in Spanish, buddy, your junk is as big as a car, and high fives.
High five. No, that it's like good fantasy.
So funny.
Your junk is as big as a car. It's really, it's funny. And honestly, I like this plot. And I think with what we know about Sam, to talk a little bit about his disordered eating, for someone to suggest to him that he needs to lose 10 pounds and for him to go, that doesn't seem healthy for me. I think, frankly, is tremendous. And like, for this person to like, who has gone through things, you know, canonically, like with disordered eating and like his body image being like, that doesn't feel right for me. And then immediately all of his friends being like, nope, like that seems bad. That seems terrible. Like, we like you just the way you are, I think is just frankly lovely. So I'm into that. I think it's really great.
Also, straight up, Tyra Banks low-key kills in this episode.
No, she does a really good job. She's smizing her ass off.
Part of my love for Tyra Banks is just because she's like so weird that I can't look away.
She is so, like, so weird.
Part of my love for her is genuine secondhand embarrassment for things that she does. Zero secondhand embarrassment in this episode. I honestly think she gives a great performance and she is like so kooky and bizarre and intimidating. It really works. Really works.
Totally.
Also, of course, the whole Bichet Bichette fiasco.
Yeah, that's hilarious.
When I'm into that. You know, I heard it and I thought it was Bichet, but looking at it spelled out, it looks like Bichette, like a little mini bitch.
Yeah. And also, Tyra Banks is credited as Bichette. Like, her name in this episode is Bichette. It's so funny. Very good.
On the other side of it, we got Blaine wants to be a doctor now.
Honestly, word.
Honestly, hear me out. Fitting that Blaine's fallback school is Columbia and his fallback career, if he doesn't make it as an actor, is a doctor.
Yeah. Honestly, good fallback.
Kid's got high hopes.
Honestly, he's very smart. He could definitely do it. Don't let us discourage you from going to big schools or pursuing a career in pre-med.
Certainly, if you want to be a doctor, go be a doctor.
Please be a doctor. We need a doctor. I need a doctor. I honestly really like this plot. And I love the conversation with Kurt because it's like, I feel like I have that conversation with myself all the time where I'm like, maybe I don't want to do this. But then I realize that I'm actually just not letting myself dream that much. Mm-hmm. And I think like that's a big part of dreaming is like talking yourself out of it and then talking yourself back into it. I love it. And I love that conversation. And then just two people who love each other being like, No, like, please don't count yourself out. You've got this. Ah, I love it.
And then Blaine says to Kurt, thank you for knowing me.
Yeah.
And oh. I have never felt more Whoa. Lonely in my entire
thank
life
you for
than
knowing
when I heard those
me?
Words.
Are you fucking joking? I will never recover.
You want to talk about the songs?
Yeah.
First yeah. up, we got I'm Moving Out. I love the use of this song. I think it's very smart because it easily could have been, which is what I thought it was going to be. It easily could have been, well, we want to give Darren, Chris, and Cord Overstreet a number. So before they leave, they're going to sing a Billy Joel song for no reason and they're going to go. And it seems like it's starting out that way with Will being like, well, they have to go to New York, so they're going to start us off this week. But then to have it transition into a travel song.
Yeah, I love a travel song.
Works really well with the lyrics of the song. It's also just so exciting to see them on the bus singing it, to see them coming out of the subway singing it. It's a lot of fun. I don't know yeah. why Blaine is dressed as Harold Hill, but whatever. The number is a great time.
No, it's tons of fun. I really like this number, and I think I love a travel song. This whole episode has like these musical theater moments, and nothing is more musical theater mm-hmm. to me than a traveling song where the set changes behind you and you run around. But I love this. I think it's fun. Frankly, looking back on this episode, I am a little frustrated at how many Blaine songs there are. I mean, it makes yeah. sense when you think about he is the person who plays the piano in this, the cast. And that's a big part of Billy Joel is like someone who sings songs and also plays them on piano.
He's a piano man.
Yeah, he's a piano man. I don't know if you guys know this. He plays the piano. But like, I'm a little frustrated with it. It just in general, but it's fun. It's certainly so much fun. Piano man.
It could have been Tina singing Vienna, but instead yeah. we have Blaine. I understand that like you can't do a Billy Joel episode without Piano Man. You also can't do a Billy Joel episode without Tina singing Vienna, but apparently we can.
But don't love this rendition personally, not because of Blaine and Cord. Blaine and Cord are actually the ones playing the instruments on the recording as well. Cord is doing the harmonica. I think the choreography is bunkish and it bugs me. Like them walking around with the candles. I'm like, I'm dead. I can't. They're so silly.
I was like, the fun of Piano Man is everyone just screaming it out together. Yeah, why are totally. They all holding candles and being so ethereal about it? You should all be sloppy.
Yeah.
You should be sloppy.
Get these people some beers and gather them
Seriously.
Around. And there's also this moment where they, like, all of the wait staff, like, picks a, like, a patron and they start dancing with them. And I'm like, this is my nightmare. My nightmare mm-hmm. scenario.
I paid you for food, not for you to pick me up and make me dance.
Seriously. And there's so many moments in this episode where that feel true to life. This is the least one. Like, if someone was singing Piano Man in any sort of establishment, every single person in the room would be singing and we mm-hmm. would all be gathered around and we'd be sloppy and drunk, you know?
Mm-hmm. Also, when they do this exact thing in Dream On where he goes, there's an old man sitting next to me making love to his tonic and gin. And then like camera pans over and we see the old yeah. man making love to his tonic and gin. In this episode, it is the cartoon of an old man.
Yeah.
Like
seriously.
Carl Fredrickson from Up. Walked into the Spotlight Diner and is having a coffee.
Yeah.
Crazy. The costume directors were so on the nose. It's yeah. a little much.
It's a little much. Yeah. That's this number for me. It does feel like a little much. And I feel like there was a way they could have made this kind of fun. And everything feels like a little much to me, frankly.
I know. It should have been like Ride With Me in season one, where it's everyone yeah. just having a great time singing. Yeah. They're not too concerned about what they sound like. They're just yeah. having fun together.
I do think that maybe they would. I can see why they wouldn't do that just because they kind of did that the first time with Brian Ryan. But yeah. also like that's Piano Man. Like
Seriously.
That's people like making love to their tonic and gin in a big group of people singing. Come on.
Come on. Say way ho.
Say way ho. Yeah.
Finally, We got Just the Way You Are. I'll be honest.
Just the way you are.
A weird to put a Bruno Mars song in a Billy Joel episode. Oh, well.
Oh, well.
When this song started, you know, Sam says, Bitchette wants me to lose 5 pounds. That makes me uncomfortable. But should I do it? And then they all say, like, you know what, Sam? We love you just the way you are. I feel a song coming on. And with Santana, I rolled my eyes. I was like, I cannot abide this. Yeah. This is so stupid. This is so cringy. This performance is so charming. And also, yeah, this song, really shout out to Billy Joel, is one of the most beautiful songs ever written. That within 45 seconds, I was all in and was like, okay, this is fun. I'm glad they did it. I'm having a good time.
Yeah, I get that. And maybe... I feel like that was the vibe I wanted them to go for with Piano Man. And maybe they were saving that vibe for this. Benefit of the doubt.
Yeah, because it's very much doesn't feel like a performance. It's a bunch of friends sitting around a piano singing together, goofing off. And it's nice.
Yeah.
I also love the arc of this whole episode. Santana keeps being like, when Sam and Blaine move to New York, it's going to be a nightmare. It's going to be like living with Kurt and Rachel times two. They're going to sing all the time. They're going to turn every argument into a song. When Blaine goes to sing Piano Man, she says, you all need to be stopped. Like, this is ridiculous. And then even at the beginning of the song, she talks about how stupid it is that they're singing the song, fully leaves the room.
Yeah.
And then to have the moment where she comes in with a hairbrush as a microphone, singing with them with the expression of like, okay, like, it's fun. I'll join in.
Also, the way she dances is so like, I can't help it. I keep dancing. I know. Like, it is like the silliest little dance she's doing. It is so sweet.
Also, I kept thinking when she and Sam were dancing together, remember how they dated?
Literally. And remember how they fought over Britney like last year?
I know, shoot, this year in the Glee timeline.
Yeah.
And then, let's get to it. Sam dances with Rachel.
Oy, oy, oy.
Let's talk about
hater.
It. There's a few moments. There's a few moments in this episode where there's like weird sexual tension between them, where Rachel goes to oil up Sam's body for the shoot, and then they have like a... and then she like feels all uncomfortable telling him how good he looks. Lay it out, Lena.
I just hate it. To me, it is fine that they could date potentially. It is so fucking offensive to me that 2 episodes ago, was this episode 6? 2 episodes? 3 episodes? I'm not sure.
Three.
3 episodes ago was the tribute episode for her boyfriend. It feels like way too soon for them to even be hinting at this. I don't like it. It feels gross, terrible to me. And it's like, Rachel has so much going on right now. So much going on right now. She does not need this for plot. Like, looking at it from like a perspective of like looking at the plot, she doesn't need this right now. She's got so much going on. I don't care to watch it. And I hate it. And I think it's offensive. I don't like it. They can date later, but give her a minute.
I agree. It feels like, I don't know. I do think in a lot of ways, ever since Sam was introduced on this show, he's been like a weird Finn surrogate. And then now that Finn is no longer on the show, it very much feels like they're just having Sam fill the Finn void. And I totally agree. Having him fill it with Rachel this soon is so gross. So they're just like, well, Rachel, she needs a dumb, nice, himbo jock boyfriend. So I guess now it'll be Sam because there's no other option. It's like, ew. Yeah. No.
Yeah, it's not my fave thing that's happened on the show. And I think it's a swing in the wrong direction, frankly.
Mm-hmm.
That's my thought on that.
Heck yeah. Well,
that's Billy Joel. That's moving out.
Yeah, I'm moving out.
We should do assignment of the week and then do.
I agree. I have one more thought. I'm so sorry.
Oh, tell me. I thought you were telling me that you don't have an assignment of the week and I was going to bully you.
Oh, no, I do. Thank goodness. there's a bit in this episode, this is so small, that I've seen on television before, and it always pisses me off. Sam's in his interview for whatever the heck the college is that he doesn't end up getting the scholarship for. And the interviewer says, I see that, you know, you struggled, you weren't doing very well in school, but it seems like your grades have picked up. And Sam says to her, oh, yeah, so what happened was I'm really good at impressions. Like, I had a hard time with school, yada, yada, yada. What happened was I'm really good with impressions, and then I decided to start doing an impression of a good student. What? And, like, I don't know, maybe that's supposed to be a joke, but it's so stupid. Specifically, here's what irritates me. Okay. Oh, do you like it?
Well, tell me what you don't like, and let me explain it in the way that I do like it.
Okay, it's a decades old wound. Once upon a time on a little Nickelodeon TV show called Zoe 101. Don't know if you've heard of it.
Never have.
A show that I frankly only have seen like three episodes of, and this is one of the three.
I was so obsessed. I remember getting mad that Jamie Lynn Spears was pregnant because that meant I didn't get any more episodes of Zoe 101. I was mad.
Boo. Boo.
I felt betrayed.
You can help me with the character names then. So, curly-haired guy who, like, is in love with Zoe.
I didn't care about any of the boys, but I can Google it for you.
I want to say Chad, but I feel like that's wrong.
Yeah. Curly-haired guy from Zoe 101, I Google. Chase.
So Chase is tutoring Victoria Justice. I'm pretty sure her name is Lola.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Victoria Justice's whole arc is that, like, she's the actor of the friend group. Like, she's way into theater. And Chase is tutoring Lola, and she's having such a hard time with math. She can't comprehend math. And Chase says to her, well, you're an actress. Just pretend you're playing the part of someone who's good at math. And it works. And suddenly Victoria Justice gets math. And it literally, that aired when I was like 9 years old. And I watched it and I was like, that is some bull crap. That is not how that works.
Yeah. I do think you're right in that's not how that works. But I do feel like as a person who has struggled in school, I have had moments where I go, how does a smart student walk into the room? Like, how does a smart student act when they're hearing a lecture? And I feel like a lot of my hangups about I'm too dumb, I can't get this, I can't get this, are gone because I'm pretending to be good at school. Like, I know that like obviously doesn't make sense in the math sense. Like, there are like concepts that need to be understood. But I do feel like, and even in my life, I wake up and I go, what is the best version of me do today? And I feel like a lot of my anxieties are gone because I'm thinking about like pretending to be like not a good person, but like, a person who is good to myself. You know what I mean? I'm like, the best version of myself is going to brush my teeth right now. You know what I mean?
No, that makes sense. That makes sense. Yeah. And it's like confidence is so integral to success that like just pretending you have confidence helps. Yeah. Like, for example, I was having a rough time with my shows for a while where I would get really in my head and really self-conscious. And then literally one day I was like, I have a degree in this. I know what I'm doing. And so any time before I go on stage, I literally just say to myself, I know what I'm doing. And then it like completely fixed the stage fright self-consciousness issue.
Exactly. Because
I just told myself I did an impression of someone who was a good performer and then I was a good performer.
And I do think that's just an interesting way to say it. Like, it's a funny way to say, like, I'm manifesting. I'm like, I'm embodying. Like, you just tell yourself you can do this. I think that's what it is. I think it's changing your mindset. But it's just a funny way of saying that.
Okay.
So, I don't know.
I forgive them and I forgive Chase and Lola from Zoe 101.
It is a dumb way to say that, though. And it does, like, I think it's pretty reductive in the sense of, like, especially school. But I do think it is, like, you know, the smart kids never struggle in school because they don't think about it. You know, they're like, I'm a smart kid. I get this, you know.
And if you believe that you can't do something, you can't do it.
Exactly.
Like, it doesn't matter if you're self-defeatist, it's not going to happen. Okay, okay. Well, assignment of the week first?
Yeah.
Great.
What are you singing? I'm not singing Vienna because that's for my girl Tina Cohen Chang.
Amen.
I'm gonna sing. What's it? Whenever we're together, that's my home. Oh my god, that's my favorite Billy Joel song. I love that song so much. Oh my god. I like, if you haven't heard that song, please, I implore you to go listen. It is the most romantic song that's ever been a song. Shout out Billy Joel. What are you singing?
I had a hard time deciding. I wrote down a list. I think the one I like the most on the list is She's Got Away.
Oh, she's got a way about it. Is.
Mm-hmm. I love that song. I think I'm doing that.
Good choice. Hell yeah.
Thank you.
Doom, doom, doom.
Best part, worst part.
Boom.
Lena, what's your best part?
Best part. What's my best song in this? Oh, I'm going to take it before you do.
No. Wait, no.
I am. Because it's the best. It's so fun. My life. I don't care what you say anymore. This is my best part.
Ba, ba, it's so ba, good. Ba, da.
What's my best part? I like this episode. Looking back, there's a lot of good parts to it. I think my best part, I like that Marlene just wants to be single. Do you know that Katie Ryan Vine where she goes, you should just go to the boyfriend store or be single. Just be single. Mm-hmm. That's Marley this episode. She's like, I just want to be single. So I love that. What's your best part?
Best song is obviously, my best song is It's My Life by Bon Jovi. And Jake sings that. Best
Gosh,
song is obviously My Life.
That episode is so good.
Do they sing
when
that song
they
on
sing
the show?
It, yeah.
Vitamin oh, the
D,
boys
baby.
Do.
Yeah.
Vitamin D, of course. One of the best episodes of the show, genuinely.
Seriously.
My second best song is Just the Way You Are. First of all, yeah. I was listening to the lyrics of that song. What a beautiful sentiment. I know
so
that's
good.
Stupid. It's a song that came out like
Don't
40
go
years ago.
Changing.
But
Try
like,
to please me.
Call. It's so gorgeous. Billy Joel, he knows what he's doing.
I know. And I especially like love the part where he's like, I don't care for anything anyone else does. I don't care for clever conversation. I like you for you. Like, you don't have to worry about any of that. I just love that.
Well, I also love that I don't care for clever conversation. Essentially, like, it'll be easier for me not to have it. Because I've genuinely had that mentality before.
Yeah.
Where it's like, I don't want to end up with anyone who's too good. Because then, like, I have to put in a bunch of work to be as good as they are.
Sure.
It's like, I just want someone who like wants to sit and watch TV with me. Like, yeah, I don't totally. Need someone who is out living this like incredible social life and like super active. And because, God, that's going to be so much work.
Yeah, I hear that. I love that song. Good choice.
My best part is so specific. But it made me laugh out loud every time I watched it. I rewound it, watched it again, and then watched it a third time when I saw the episode a second time, and I laughed every time. When Blaine tells Kurt that he might want to be a doctor, and Kurt's like, sarcastically like, oh yeah, because I know how much you've always talked about how much you love medicine. And Blaine says, my passion for medicine has always been my secret shame. Yeah. You know, my favorite game growing up was Operation. And then it cuts back to little 7-year-old Blaine in like his button-up shirt and a bow tie playing Operation. And he looks at the camera and says, here goes his funny bone. Like very as if he's like an announcer on a TV show. Very excitedly reaches down to get the funny bone out.
Immediately.
Bumps the wall. You hear the buzzer. And he just says in the most disappointed voice, dang.
No, it's very funny.
Is so funny.
And it also, I think, is such a good like narrative device in that this kid is not suited for medicine. Like,
he couldn't even
like don't
the funny
get
bone.
It twisted. Literally. It's so silly. It's awesome. Yeah, that's
right.
A good part. What's your
worst part?
Oh yeah. What's my worst part? What is my worst part? Oh, I'll tell you what.
I was
going to
say, you don't
Literally,
know?
Literally, I didn't know. Ugh. Sam and Rachel. That's all I'll say. What's your worst part?
Besides the Sam and Rachel What else did I not like in this episode? I don't really have a worst part besides that. And it's not because like this episode is like incredible, but like none of it's bad. You know?
Middle of the road. Yeah.
But just Rachel's just like so cool and self-assured. It's honestly, sometimes I feel like a bad person. How anytime that Rachel is confident, we're like, who does this bitch think she is? We're like, keep her self-conscious. I want her to hate herself. But just like, you know, that's relatable. Like being a little self-conscious, especially like 18 years old, new to the city. Like she should be more self-conscious than she is. And the girl we fell in love with was a girl who the reason she was so overbearing and so bossy was because she was compensating for the fact that she felt like such an outsider. Yeah. And I just wish that she felt a little more like an outsider because like that's relatable and that's who I loved.
Yeah, I agree.
Shoot. Well,
that's moving out.
If that's moving on, then I'm
good
moving
luck.
Out. Then I'm if that's moving up, thank you. If that's moving up, then I'm
well. There's
moving
there's
out.
Also the line, "Good luck moving on," because
I'm moving out. If you got thoughts on moving out, send them to us recoveringgleek@gmail.com. Don't know if you've heard of it.
If you'd like, you can follow us on social media. You can follow us at recoveringgleek_podcast on Twitter and Instagram, and then at on TikTok and Instagram, and then at recoveringgleek on Twitter. If you'd like, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That actually helps us a lot. It helps us more than you think. I don't even know how it works, but it helps us genuinely.
It gets us recommended to more and more people. If you want to support our podcast, you can subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/recoveringgleek. We're going to give a little thank you shout out to some of our best friends of the podcast, our highest patrons. Your time to beat is a minute 39.
For me? That's very good. That's very good. Thank you. Two, go. Evie, Sarah, Camlin, Danica, Shalane, Salty Boy, Hannah, Eli, Zabana, Mary, Kay, Atticus, Brittany, Meg, Ava, Carolina, Reagan, Meredith, Clorhio, Katie, Alex, Josette, Tori, Emmy, Marcus, Lowe, Ethan, Danielle, Brisa, Maggie, Ian, Sutton, Madeline, Tiffany, Alani, Rachel, Elise, Kieran, Diane, Ellerain, Jeanette, Benjamin, Suzanne, Blanton, Lola, Ben, Alice, B, Bamit's Ham, Katie, Fanson, Nadia, Savannah, Vidya, Meadow, Nicole, Allie, Joseph, Jackson, Tori, Gally, Caitlin, Patrice, Garbage, Maddie, Abby, Kodiak, Kirsten, Story, Natasha, Liz, Eileen, Mariah, Manuel, Mallory, Sarah, Hannah, Matilda, Rebecca, Libby, Eve, Jordan, Andrew, Elizabeth, Christina, Dell, Ari, Liam, Riley, Juliana, Elijah, Stephanie, Haley, Raphael, Marissa, Rin, Taylor, Kimberly, Carlin, Frankie, Dana, Chase, Finley, Jocelyn, Margaret, Despina, Liz, Josie, Nash, Aaron, Alana, Marin, Han, Phoebe, Kaylee, Caitlin, Megan, Emily, Aria, Jeremy, Beatrice, Eva, Haley, Emily, Anaya, Michelle, Lauren, Marcus, Lisa, I Am Four Eyes, Jacqueline, Spencer, Elsie, Troy, Mallory, Meredith, Phoebe, Hannah, Laura, Ray, Emily, Alyssa, Charlie, Lily, Melanie, Unula, Sam, Samantha, Aubrey, Stephanie, Kat, Kelsey, Haley, Tiffany, Emily, Leah, Kelsey, Isabel, Amira, Thomas, Chucho, Cyrus, Brittany, Victoria, Aaliyah, Naomi, Haley, Robbie, Andy, Kenzie, Rhiannon, Ashley, Roman, Michael, Andre, Katie, Will, Elizabeth, Freddie, Sinead, Emma, Turtle, Allison. Stop.
Ooh, minute 43, baby.
Mm-hmm. Pretty good.
I love that you gave us options on that one. You did a little Carolina, Madeline.
There are so many where I'm like, this could be said this way, Madeline, Carolina, I don't know.
Yeah, you threw them both out there.
Seriously. I'm like, love you guys, I want to say your name right. I'm sorry. Also, my brain halfway through, like, hugely farted. I was like, why is this so hard?
Honestly, I heard it and it smelt.
It smelled. Sorry. All right, y'all. That's your episode. Thank you all for being here. Thanks for listening. Go listen to Billy Joel now. He's so awesome and cool. Here is a kiss on your forehead for the rest of your week. Hope you have a great one. Here it is.
Tune in next week for the minisode. We go to that for a puppet master.
Ooh, get excited. Get excited. See you later.
Bye.
Bye.
Thank you for listening to Recovering Gleek. You can find us on Instagram and TikTok at recoveringgleek_podcast. If you liked our podcast, be sure to leave a review. And tell your friends, please.
So here's an embarrassing truth about me. In my brain, Elton John and Billy Joel are the same person. And I frequently am confronted with a song, and I really have to stop and think. I'm like, Goodbye Yellow Brick Road, that's obviously Billy Joel. And then I'm like, wait. And no. Same, like, I was thinking about, like, She's Got Away. I was like, that's Elton John. And then I went on Spotify, it's Billy Joel. I don't know what it is, because as men, wildly different.
Yeah. They're also, very one different. Is British, one is like, true New Yorker, you know?
One is like British, New York's pride, very flamboyantly gay.
Yeah.
And the other one is like a straight, big-time New Yorker Jewish man. Yeah. And in my brain, they're the exact same person.
Why? Because they write their own songs and they play the piano?
I think it's also because my dad listened to both of them growing up a lot, and so I just could never distinguish.
That makes sense.
But I don't know in this episode why they didn't have anyone sing Crocodile Rock. I was like,
honestly,
come on.
My favorite Billy Joel song. Come on.
Where's Rocket Man?
Yeah.
Dula Peep? Come on.
Unsere Krankenhäuser sind immer für uns da. Tag und Nacht. In ganz Deutschland. Sie möchten mehr zur neuen Krankenhausreform wissen? Dann sind Sie hier richtig. Krankenhaus-mit-zukunft.de. Eine Information des Bundesministeriums für Gesundheit.